September 11th, 2009, the Norris Group returns with its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate 2009. For this critical final quarter, the Norris Group has assembled a gold panel of accomplished industry specialists to discuss the impact of seismic economic shifts, head-scratching regulations, challenging legislation, and the accelerated pace of opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds for this unique event support the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for The Cure. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshop and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskiest, Invest Club for Women and Director Iris Veneration, Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for iSurvive2009.com, J.K. Short Sales and Kathy Van Sleen, Entrust California and Hugh Broma, the Nixon Library, MVT Productions, who always provide the audio-visual needs, the Business Press, airing the event live over the Internet, and White House Catering, who will provide the three-course meal for this black tie event. Visit iSurvive2009.com for more details.
Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our guest is Sean O'Toole. He's a fellow investor, a past trustee sale buyer, and the founder and CEO of ForeclosureRadar.com. Sean, welcome to our show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're really running one of our favorite sites. We bought a property, a trustee sale, on Friday, and we used your site to accomplish that.
Wow, very cool.
It is. That was great. I guess the first question I wanted to ask you is, how has being an investor influenced the content on your site?
Yeah, you know, it's probably a little bit of a subtle thing. You know, I don't know that I completely realized it, but having been an investor and having built the site first for myself, right?
I can't think of a more important thing.
Yeah, you know, this started off as an internal project. I actually never planned to make it public or launch it out wider.
I actually think it comes across, and no kidding, because what you just said, the subtleties is really where the values are. No one could have put that site together without understanding the business.
Yeah, I'm really super excited to hear you say that, because that's the way we feel about it. But you know, you always wonder if you're the only one.
Well, you know, when you have experience, and it's almost like taking education. To be honest with you, I always get asked by people, you know, is it worth taking training? And you go, you know what? And sometimes you get asked that by the most experienced people, and I guess my experience has been the most experienced people are able to recognize the small differences that end up making all the difference. And a website is very similar to that. When you're looking around and you go, okay, this is here. For instance, the ease of looking up the trust deeds against a property.
Right.
How big of a deal is that on a daily basis for a trustee sale buyer?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I found really helped me early on was to show the transaction history and kind of a chain of title order with the notices, the foreclosure notices, you know, kind of dropped in underneath the deeds of trust that they belong to. And just seeing that, kind of, I can look at that really quickly and say, oh, okay, you know, this person bought this house, they refinanced it, oh, I bet you there was a divorce. You know, you can see the story much faster, especially as you gain experience.
On a daily basis, when you're looking at hundreds to end up with five,
right?
The speed is everything. I mean, if you get a list that doesn't have that, you're pretty much so busy just checking out chains of title that you almost don't have time to attend a sale.
Right.
And
right.
So very valuable stuff. Is Foreclosure Radar a California service or is it a national service?
Well, we started in California. We did recently expand just in the last few weeks here into most of Arizona and the populous areas of Nevada, Washington, and Oregon.
Okay. So, the West Coast service at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Now, how long has it been in existence for Closure Radar?
So I started tracking the foreclosure sales in 2002 for my own, you know, investing purposes, and kind of started off in a couple of counties and expanded out from there to where I was doing the entire state by kind of mid-2006.
Okay.
And then decided to you know, put a little bit more user-friendly, you know, front on the software, and we launched officially in May of 2007 as a service that was available to everyone.
Okay. How have the quantities of foreclosures changed since 2002?
Well, you know the answer to this one. I mean, it's been really amazing. In fact, that's one of the things that happened in 06, and one of the things that pushed me to make it a service available to other folks is, you know, I started off in just a couple of counties, and we were having such a hard time finding deals. We kept expanding and expanding. And then I did a really great commercial deal, and I said, well, I want to look for those in an even broader area, and that's what took me statewide. And then in 06, suddenly we started to see these massive changes in the numbers of filings, and it was impossible to keep up with, and I realized that I couldn't afford the expense of doing all this research if it was only for my own purposes. And I realized also that there was going to be so much available that, you know, I didn't need to do it just for my own purposes. You know, I didn't need to hog the data.
Is the process of getting the information physically obtained, or is it now computerized to where somehow you don't have to have that person spending hours at each of the counties?
Yeah, it really has not changed much. And in fact, I was speaking recently, and I said, really, one of the biggest problems I think we have in steering this whole ship called the economy right now is real estate data is just really, really hard to get your hands on still. All of these documents that get recorded at the county recorder's office, you'd think, well, you just run them through a computer and pull the data off of them, but they're not formatted consistently enough. So literally all of these notices that get recorded at the county recorder's office have to get hand abstracted. So somebody has to sit there, read the notice, and type the data fields into a computer, and then we go from there. So yeah, it's very, very manual. I believe unnecessarily so, and I think ultimately the law probably needs to change. I think it's just the whole data stream is too important not to have better access to.
On your website, you have a category called tutorial, which I went through a couple of those today, which is really informative. What is FLX? I didn't get to that one, so I need to know what that one is.
Yeah, that one's more aimed at our realtor customers.
Okay.
And the idea there was, you know, what we kind of tried to do, I mean, a couple of things that we tried to do to set our service aside or different from other foreclosure services was, one, we wanted to make it a lot more interactive. You know, you add photos, add notes, you know, kind of more Web 2.0-like, much deeper search capabilities, which would be more similar to like a realtor has access to the MLS directly, and they can search on lots and lots of fields. We have about 60 fields in Foreclosure Radar. But if you go to a realtor's public website, they have something called an IDX search, which is kind of a consumer-oriented search. You can search on bedrooms and baths and some basic things.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of wanted to be the foreclosure MLS, but we have a lot of realtor customers, so we wanted to give them this IDX-like component that they could add to their website. So that's what FLX is. That allows our customers to show foreclosures on their own website, and then, you know, provide the information there. The other thought is, you know, consumers, our site's more aimed towards the professional user.
Mm-hmm.
And consumers right now, they're really the only option for foreclosure information is the big consumer websites like RealtyTrack, foreclosure.com, some of these others. And, you know, we really felt it was important to insert realtors into that mix and be able to provide that information for free rather than the consumer having to pay for it from these other websites. And so that's what FLX does. It adds foreclosure search to realtors' websites such that they can offer foreclosure information to their clients at no charge.
Your clientele at this point is a sophisticated investor. Is that more the norm?
Yeah, it were realtors, primarily the professional investors, and then we have a lot of government users, you know, mosquito abatement districts looking for swimming pools to spray.
I noticed that, and I pulled that down, and it says, identify lenders who aren't maintaining their REO properties. Now, is that because something would have come up on the chain that they got leaned?
Well, you know, our local and county governments are looking for new revenue opportunities. And
yes.
One of the things that got passed this last year was the ability to fine a lender up to $1,000 a day for not maintaining a property. So, you know, the government entities want to go out and find those revenue opportunities.
And they're doing it.
Yes, they are.
Every time we close an escrow, that's the last thing we check if it's an REO. That may be one of the challenges of buying. Well, actually, a trustee sale is almost safer, isn't it? Because the fine does not begin until after that transfer.
That's right.
So, yeah, you can be a lousy landlord and you can't get fined. That's a good one. Have you decided to do any training regarding the investment business?
Well, you know, there's some great resources out there doing training like yourselves. We've kind of decided to try to stay out of that that side of the business just because, you know, one of the things that I have learned is that there's a lot of different approaches.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we kind of wanted to be there to support, you know, everyone no matter what their approach, whether they're, again, a mosquito abatement district looking to spray a swimming pool or, you know, a short sale investor, which was a new term. I learned about this this year, which seemed rather impossible to me, but I guess there's some folks out there doing it and making that happen.
Well, you know, that's it. Some of the statistics actually I want to go over now because there definitely hasn't been some very big changes in the last year. And then the solutions that are more becoming more popular has certainly changed. So why don't we talk about year-over-year defaults and maybe just in California? So if I was looking at a year ago, the default numbers as compared to 2009, how different are they?
Largely flat.
Okay.
You know, so in July we saw 45,000, June 46,000. I think we're going to see a drop in August. I just have preliminary numbers so far, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them off 15-20%.
Okay.
In California. Last year around the same time, we were seeing 42, 41, 40,000. So up a little bit, but you know, pretty similar on the default side.
Okay, well, here's the big question. Why is my question? Because the people that are late as a percentage have exploded in that year.
Yes.
So why no more defaults, yet the person behind is almost doubled. Not
right.
Quite, but almost doubled. So, yeah, do you have any reason why that the NODs would not have reflected that?
One of the things that we saw, and I got to say this is a little bit anecdotal or speculative, but shortly after September 19th, we were kind of on this trend that was just up, up, up. And, you know, up in defaults, up in notices of trustee sale, up in foreclosure sales at auction, up until we hit September of last year. And a few things happened in September, right? Fannie and Freddie went into conservatorship. We had the SB 1137, kind of the first foreclosure moratorium here in California where it required some additional documentation. But one that I don't think gets enough attention is Paulson announced that he was seeking TARP, you know, Troubled Asset Relief Funds, which became known as TARP.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look back at that announcement, though, really what he told the market was is, you know, these assets are being sold at distress. This is a temporary problem. If these loans aren't forced to be foreclosed on and they're held to maturity. You know, there won't be any losses. We shouldn't force these banks to mark their assets to market. We should provide funds, if necessary, to these banks and buy these assets off the banks and supply them with cash using the taxpayer dollar. And at the end of the day, that whole thing basically said, you know, banks, if you have bad loans, we'll help you out. But if you have bad homes, right, so if you foreclose on these things,
yes,
you know, you're just going to have to take the loss.
Okay, so the emphasis really went away from taking the asset back to solving it somehow in the process.
Or even just pushing the can down the road, and let's just not worry about it right now and hope it gets better in the future.
You know, it's interesting, and this comes with age. I've seen a few of these now, and the lenders did this the last time. They didn't have a TARP agreement, but they must have had something going on to where they just sort of stopped foreclosing. And they actually had to vote in a rule that said you had to begin foreclosure after 100 days. And if I'm not mistaken, that came around 1995, where you could have people, you know, 10 months behind and no one cared. They just didn't want another foreclosure. And I just find it interesting that back then they were forcing the lenders to act, and now they're almost a partner in the non-action.
I mean, look at it even just a step further with the FDIC, right? The FDIC is there to safeguard depositors, right? So you put money in a bank, it's there to safeguard you, right? Which they're usually the ones in there that are forcing these banks to push through the bad assets, and if there's a problem, bring it to light. And yet you have Sheila Bair, you know, chairman of the FDIC, kind of leading the anti-foreclosure, let's do loan mods instead, right? Mm-hmm. I don't even know that that's part of their charter, per se, right? They're usually the ones that should be forcing the bad assets through and getting the books cleaned up, and instead they're delaying what I think is the inevitable.
Well, you really bring up a good point, because if it is inevitable, then the pile they've delayed is much bigger than the pile we've experienced.
Right.
And that's that usually is detrimental to price, ultimately. Do you see loan modifications taking a chunk out of the trustee sales at this point? Is that something that's really become more prevalent?
We think so. One of the things that we watch, because we watch not only the public record notices of what's going into foreclosure, but we track all these things through the foreclosure auctions, right? So we know what's sold and what's canceled. And we're really the only service that does that on a wide-scale basis anywhere in the nation. And so just to put things in perspective here, last year we had 65,000, last July, we had 65,000 properties scheduled for foreclosure auction.
And this is in California?
In California.
Okay.
And we had just under 29,000 foreclosed on. It's almost 50%.
Okay.
In August, we will have had 130,000 scheduled for sale.
Now, in August of what? Now, are we talking?
Of 2009.
2009, okay. Was that July of 2008 or 2009?
That was July of 2008.
2008, okay. So a year
and
later.
We've doubled the number of people actively scheduled for sale. I mean, their property has a date and time to go to trustee sale.
Mm-hmm.
That's doubled since last year. Yet we've gone from 29,000 sold in July of 2008, that was the peak, too, of sales, to 17,500 August this year. So we have double the number scheduled for foreclosure and almost half the number that are actually foreclosed on. Now, we believe one of the things, and we really saw that tick up pretty hard starting in March and April. And what we think is happening there is the new Making Home Affordable program.
Yes.
Has a 3-month trial period.
Okay.
And so they're putting these folks into foreclosure and starting this trial period, but not actually foreclosing on them. So what we're waiting to see now is to see if the cancellations of these foreclosure sales start ticking up, right? Because if they start going way, way up, that means that the trial modifications are working, and we're moving forward. If, on the other hand, we start seeing sales go way up, that means that these trial loan mods are failing. And in August, I think we're going to actually see cancellations go down a little bit versus up. So we don't see any sign yet. If that's what's pushing these inventories of properties that are scheduled up so high, we don't see any indication yet that it's working. I thought we might start seeing it this month because it's been about 3 months since making home affordable first went into place.
When you're talking about those numbers, you're talking about pushing forward another 113,000 possible trustee sales. And
yeah,
every month?
130 scheduled right now for sale.
Okay, and 17 likely to make it to the finish line. It's just 113,000. You've put that in perspective. That's probably nearly 6 to 9 months worth of a bad year in the past. And now it's almost a monthly occurrence. And so that hitting the market would definitely have some detrimental impact, if not immediately. If it got a cumulative, that would be tough. If they're counting on modifications to solve this, isn't the history of modifications a pretty low percentage that stick with that?
Yeah, I guess there was a headline today from LPS saying that the more recent modifications are starting to do a little bit better than the earlier ones. But, you know, there's a very high recidivism rate in the loan mods. It makes sense, right? So if at the end of the day, the average property that makes it through the foreclosure process in California is $200,000 upside down.
Right.
So unless the loan modification includes a principal balance of a significant portion of that, even if you can afford the payment, it's still a pretty heavy psychological, you know, toll to come home and know that you owe $450,000 on a house that's worth $250,000, even if you can afford your payment.
That brings up another topic and a new term I never heard of until recently, called a strategic foreclosure.
Right.
So that's where the person's perfectly capable of making the payment, but just decides, nah, I think I won't. There's probably no way to judge that, but is that your sense that that is also now adding to the pile?
Well, I mean, it certainly makes sense on a lot of levels. I actually met with a guy who runs a pretty large, you know, multi-billion-dollar hedge fund, and he tells me, it's pretty funny that we all believe that homeowners, you know, wouldn't walk away from a bad debt, and yet, you know, all my buddies that run leveraged buyout firms and, you know, that work in the corporate world, you know, it's just a business decision. You make a bad bet and, you know, you get upside down, whatever, you walk away, right? You declare bankruptcy, worst case.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's totally accepted in the business world, and yet, you know, it still carries all this moral stigma in the, you know, for consumers and homeowners, and it'll be interesting to see if it still does in a couple of years.
I think what's interesting, we're down to half a minute left. There's a book called Animal Spirits, and this is the opposite of that. This is societal permission to default, and the more you have, the more permission there is. And so that's how you end up with this gigantic problem getting worse, is there's so many people that you're surrounded by that are making that decision, you just go, well, I guess it's not that bad. Sean, I've really enjoyed this. Sean O'Toole, foreclosureradar.com. Really a great website if you're in the wholesale buying business. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com. The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2009. 1M1 Properties, Dalmay Properties, Elite Auctions, the Inland Empire Investors Forum, Las Brisas Escrow, Los Angeles Event Center, the Mortgage Equity Group, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, the REO Mentor, Tony Alvarez, Westin South Coast Plaza,
Women's Council of Realtors, Inland Valley Chapter. To find out more about I Survived Real Estate 2009 and how you can get involved, visit isurvived2009.com.